Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Last week, the S&P 500 hit another all-time high, and the May jobs report surprised to the upside. This week, investors will be focused on the May CPI data, as well as the Fed's policy decision, both of which come out on Wednesday. So joining us today on the CIO Strategy Snapshot to make sense of all of this data and what it means for the markets and your portfolio, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, good morning. Thank you for joining us here on a Monday to kick off another week and looking forward to our conversation.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. It's good to be here for another week.
So, Jason, as I alluded to, a lot to cover and catch our listeners up on. Perhaps we can begin with the jobs report, which, as mentioned, was better than expected, came out last Friday. What does the jobs data, Jason, say about the state of the labor market?
Well, let's just summarize some of the stats first on the payrolls report. Jobs increased, non-farm payrolls increased in May by 272,000. The consensus forecast going in with 180,000, so a sizable beat. But on the other hand, the unemployment rate went up to 4% from 3.9%, and the participation rate fell from 62.7 to 62.5. And so in between that was the average hourly earnings that went up 0.4% month over month, or down to 4.1% year over year, which was above the 3.9% expected. So I would categorize this as a modestly kind of hot or warm report overall. But again, it showed sort of the conflict between sort of the payrolls data that is based on an established survey of businesses and the unemployment and participation rate, which is based on surveys of households. What we know is that, you know, the quality of the survey for businesses, the establishment survey, is better historically and probably even more so this past year or two versus the household survey. But this gap is sort of, you know, is noteworthy, and you guys kind of call it the question, are perhaps the payrolls number overstating the overall strength in the job market? And then when you look at the other data, including stuff that we got out last week, there are some indications or reasons to think that, you know, the labor market remains strong, but it's not quite as strong as that headline number of 272,000 would indicate. Earlier in the week, we got job openings that declined and kind of was bigger than expected. They are now where they were, you know, right around or not much higher than they were versus prior beginning. And in key, the ratio of job openings to the unemployed, which is an indication of basically kind of supply and demand imbalance, is down to about 1.25 job openings per unemployed person. Again, this is kind of similar but slightly higher to where it was, you know, in late 2019, beginning of 2020 before the pandemic. Other data similar to those kind of that pre-pandemic levels are the quit rate, which means what percentage of workers are quitting. It's dropped quite a bit. This is not the great resignation anymore by any stretch. And the hiring rate is also lower. So if you look, you know, the overall labor market, it kind of looks to be like where it was in late 2019. It was a strong labor market, one that was, you know, not far out of being balanced, but certainly not necessarily one of overheating. So it's a good picture overall. The headline number might overstate it, but it, you know, it's clearly also from where we were a year to 2 years ago, when the labor market was incredibly tight. It was sometimes blowing over. It's kind of gotten much more into balance, which ultimately is kind of what the Fed wants to see. So it's moved in the right direction at this point in time.
So, Jason, expanding from the labor market to the overall economy, I note that in your most recent blog, which is titled "And the Beat Goes On," you do say that growth concerns, which have been rising, seem to be receding again. Why is that?
Well, if we go back to, you know, the spring time frame, early in the spring, like in April, the concern of investors is actually that the economy could actually be overheating. We saw the labor market, you know, pick up throughout Q1. Retail sales remain strong. Inflation was hot. So the idea of this sort of a no landing situation where the economy just doesn't kind of moderate at all from elevated levels of growth. As we moved into, you know, early May, the data that we're getting from April suggested there was moderation. So investors became more comfortable again with the idea of a soft landing. Things would sort of moderate, which is relevant and important for the Fed and for the inflation outlook. But as we move further into May, a lot of the data points across different categories were surprising to the downside, whether it was the payroll support for April, retail sales, ISM, things of that sort. So it started to get a little bit concerned, well, maybe this is actually an economy that's slowing quite quickly. A simple way to look at that is, you know, there's just surprise indices, like how much the data is surprising to the upside versus expectations versus the downside. So again, this is sort of fueling some kind of growth concerns that maybe the economy is moderating, you know, very quickly. But if we see now with a little bit more data through the end of Friday, where we're starting to get some of the May data, it suggests that we have an economy that is moderating from an elevated level, but it's kind of gradual and it's from a very high level. So some of it still is around 2% trend level, or even slightly above. So some of that, the economic surprise data, it's not quite as negative, and now it's becoming more sort of balanced, closer to sort of around neutral. A lot of that weakness was in soft data, like sentiment data, versus hard activity data, which had been holding a bit better. And the hard data has proven to be a better predictor or lead indicator for where the economy is going than the soft data, not just in the past couple of years, but even going back to 2018, 2019 timeframe. Then we saw the ISM services index actually beat to the upside last week for May, and it's at the highest level since last August. All this is kind of captured by the fact that the Atlanta Fed has a GDP tracking estimate that was around 3.5% right before Memorial Day weekend. By this time last week, it was down to 1.85%, so a pretty sizable decline, but it closed that Friday at 3.1%. So kind of almost a V-shaped pattern in the course of 2 weeks. And it's sort of consistent with maybe there's a bit of a speed bump or turbulence or air pocket, however you want to classify it. But overall, what it does suggest is the growth was elevated, it's moderating. And you can see this is true in other data points that, you know, whether it's the Dallas Fed has a weekly economic index, just air travel, the number of people flying is up. So the economy is still doing fine, but, you know, kind of maybe moderating. So all of a sudden, so I think the bottom line is that those growth concerns receded. I think investors have comfort that growth is still at or above trend, and the risk of a sudden slowdown is still relatively low. So if you want to believe in the soft landing, the data over the last week kind of reaffirmed that after a bit of a, let's say, turbulent air pocket, the week or two prior to that.
So, Jason, turning to this week, we will receive inflation data as well as the FOMC rate decision that will come out on Wednesday this week. What do you expect from both of these data points?
Let's just start with the inflation. The consensus forecast is that CPI, the headline number, is going to increase 0.1% month over month and 0.3% for core inflation. This corresponds to 3.4-3.5% in the year over year, so slightly down from last month. If the data comes in line with expectations, as it did in April, I think that's going to be sufficient for investors to remain comfortable with the disinflation outlook. So the core numbers are still, a little on the high side, but relative to where they were in the Q1, running close to 0.5% month over month, 0.3, and that's rounded up. I think the consensus is probably more like 0.25 to 0.3. That starts to get more in line with what the Fed would need to see to be consistent with inflation trending lower to its 2% target. It would probably take a pretty sizable beat on the upside, similar to what happened in Q1, where it's like 0.1 or 0.2 above the forecast to really shake that confidence. So in some way, heading for the market, the focus is really going to be on the Fed on Wednesday. We shouldn't get any rate hike. That's not going to happen. The statement should be relatively similar to what we had before. So the focus will be on the summary of economic projections, so what the Fed is forecasting, and the dot plot, which is the median among the FOMC members for number of cuts this year in particular, and also to some extent next year. The forecast for the economy shouldn't change very much. Growth looks like it's still going to come in around the 2.3-2.4% range. Year-end expectation for core PCE, which is what the Fed cares most about, those might tick up a little bit given the numbers have been running hot for the past few months. But again, not a dramatic change. So the real focus is whether the Fed guides from the 3 cuts this year down to 2 or 1. That's the real debate. Ultimately, I think I'd say the my view and kind of the anecdotal evidence is that the kind of informal consensus view is that they're going to go from 3 to 2 cuts. This gives them sort of optionality. Signal only one cut. They're basically saying the market would interpret it that they're only going to cut once this year in December, so they're off the table for 6 months, which doesn't leave them a lot of room in case the economy does slow, in case inflation does come down quickly, or there's other factors that would suggest things are kind of adversely impacting the economy. If they go to 2 cuts, they can always reassess in September and then take it down to 1. And what we've seen is really that the Fed has been, for the past year, since June of last year, has been pretty consistent with its view of where the funds rate would end it this year, around 4.65%, which would imply 3 cuts from the current level. They might go to 4.5, which implies 2. I think that's likely, but not a dramatic change. Right now, the market's pricing about 1.5 cuts for year-end. So something that is 2 cuts would be viewed as, you could say, dovish, but kind of reaffirms maybe the whisper number that it's going to only be 2. Whereas 1 cut, I think, would be viewed as a pretty hawkish outcome that the market's not expecting. So that's our take is a modest adjustment of the margins for what the Fed is suggesting, and sort of inflation that's probably going to be in line with expectations at this point in time.
So, Jason, as we close out, turning to the markets and portfolios, I did mention at the start that the S&P 500 did hit another all-time high last week. So based on the economic outlook that you shared with our listeners, our clients, what does this all mean for your investment outlook from here?
Well, the economy is on a soft landing trajectory that investors are increasingly confident in. By that, I mean it's the situation where kind of growth is cooling but not cracking, that disinflation is more likely than inflation reacceleration, and the Fed's clear bias is towards cutting, not hiking rates, and they do cut starting in September. That's our base case. If the data we get this week for inflation, the Fed is sort of in line with expectations, that'll just further reinforce investor kind of confidence in that. If that happens, then the macro tailwinds that have supported the markets in March and now the beginning of June, those tailwinds should continue. And so the fact that we had an all-time high in the S&P last week, I mean, it certainly shouldn't be surprising if we set all-time new highs later this week, conditional on the data. Now, if the inflation data and the Fed communication disappoints in some capacity, it's going to slow that momentum, but it's unlikely to derail the overall direction of travel as long as the data is not far out of expectations. So it might kind of a bit of a pause and sort of range bound, but ultimately we think by year end, equity markets continue to kind of drift higher. The magnitude just depends on how good the data is. So one end, so all that means more upside for equities. A lot of it also hinges on a topic we have not discussed at all during this podcast, is what happens on the AI narrative. That's been one of the biggest drivers for the market in the last week. Some of the big mega cap tech stocks, they were really about the big drivers of the markets. Today, on Monday, we get the Apple has its Worldwide Developer Conference. A lot of focus and expectations for what they can announce regarding AI. I have no specific view on that, but how the market takes it could be a further tailwind for the markets or not. So I think that's another kind of other micro level dynamic that could play out. Direction, we think it will kind of move in the right direction, or in terms of the AI story still playing out, which is why we like tech as a sector. The macro environment that I laid out should be favorable for things like small cap stocks. That did suffer a little bit as rates moved higher on growth concerns a little bit. And then within fixed income, we continue like quality fixed income. And thinking about from a range perspective, as the 10-year drifts more towards 4.5, 4.5%, this is an opportunity to buy. As it drifts lower, it's an opportunity to kind of sit on the sidelines. And ultimately, we think rates will go lower to year end. So that should play out, but at a more tactical basis, thinking about opportunities to kind of load up on quality fixed income as the 10-year backs up to 4.5% or even higher.
Well, Jason, thank you for dropping by to provide your take on the macroeconomic environment, share some thoughts on recent market drivers, and previewing for us what will be a busy week ahead, accounting for the inflation print as well as the FOMC meeting. So thank you again for your time and insights as always, Jason, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in the week ahead.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Today, we have been joined by Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason's blog, which we have been making reference to during our conversation today, and The Beat Goes On, which is available for you now up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways companies and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.